Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 321 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's episode, we are going to be discussing the passing of director John Avildsen, James Gunn talking about his R-rated Scooby-Doo, and the fact that Deadpool has claimed another victim, this time a pirate. Reviews for The Mummy, King Kong, Pirates 5, Deepwater Horizon, The Duel, and Into the Forest, along with trailers for Black Panther, Daddy's Home 2, First Kill, Detroit, and the new remake of Flatliners. Not so sure about that one. First, let's get into the trivia, which is this is a bit of a bait and switch, actually, here.
Huh.
Because, I don't really have a trivia question tonight. I thought of something the other day, and I thought, oh, I'll throw that in the trivia. But I actually have a question for the listeners. And my question for the listeners is maybe you can answer this, and maybe somebody who's listening can answer this and post it on our Facebook page or wherever, or just shout it out your window.
Yeah,
where,
right.
If you live close to one of us.
Yeah.
Exactly. Just walk down the street, just scream it out, and we'll, you know. Everyone,
it'll get back to us somehow.
It's like telephone. But I saw an interview with Mark Wahlberg, and he's bitching and moaning about having to maintain this long hair, which makes no sense to me because he's had long hair in plenty of other movies. But he says he's having to keep it for all these reshoots on Transformers, blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
And the gal interviewing him, the gal, what am I, fucking my grandpa?
Yeah.
The gal, we say the broad over there.
Yeah, anyways, my girl Friday.
The lady interviewing him asked him about the physique transformation for Transformers, and he was saying that he had put on weight in Deepwater Horizon. He had gotten, he said, chubby,
yeah,
at about 212 pounds, which he is clearly in that movie. And he said that he had gotten in really good shape for a movie he was going to do with director Peter Berg, and that movie was canceled. And then he said Peter Berg asked him to get chubby, quote-unquote chubby again, for Patriots Day before getting back into shape for Transformers. What the fuck is the movie that they were going to do that was canceled? Now, is that Uncharted film that it went to Tom Holland?
I have no idea.
I'm trying to think, what movie did they get that far into production that he was, 10 weeks into, hardcore working out for that? It's been bugging me since I heard it, so I don't know. The rantings of a madman. Anyways, here's the real trivia question, which isn't really a trivia question, but which genre, quote-unquote genre, these are classical genres, like the titling that you'd see in your local video store. Remember how every genre had their section in a video store back in the day?
What's a video store?
It's a place people used to go to that worshipped things.
I haven't been to one in so long. Yeah, of course.
It was the original Netflix and chill, motherfucker. It was, and $3 was like 20 bucks today. Uh-huh. It wasn't free. It should have been Netflix and chill since the Blockbuster days. We just didn't call it Netflix. We're a Blockbuster chilling. Anyways, which genre, excluding the superhero genre, which is kind of this new, which used to be like a subgenre, and now it's become a full-blown genre, but which genre has Tom Cruise not appeared in? Let's think about this. He's appeared in every genre except for this one.
Except for one genre?
That's awesome. Yeah.
And I mean, is it like a subgenre?
No, I'd say it's, I mean, you would probably count it now, but I mean, it had its own section in the video store.
You're talking about a Western?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got it. But he literally has appeared in a musical, quote-unquote, martial arts type movie. Never been in a Western. He has been. I mean, people I don't want any bullshit Facebook responses to this because there is an asterisk here. Let me tell you what it is. It is that he cameoed very briefly as a guy getting shot, like an extra in Young Guns 1.
Yeah, but that doesn't, I wouldn't count that.
Thank you. Neither do I. I just rewatched Young Guns 1 and 2. They were on HD Movies Net.
Mm-hmm.
And that channel, first of all, it's got a great signal on that channel. I don't know what it is, but for the high frame rate of my television, it makes, especially those kind of movies from the early 90s, late 80s, really come alive.
Yeah, I know.
That first Young Guns is still shit. It's shit, man.
It's all right. I mean, in all honesty, they're both kind of aged.
I used to really love the second one for many reasons. I mean, I feel like we're forever linked with the second one because of our student films and whatnot and the musical cues that we may have lifted.
But they you have to admit they are aged.
Oh, absolutely. But it's very strange to me when I'm watching Emilio Estevez in that role of Billy the Kid and is cackling and kind of like the high energy. I'm going, this is like a Cruise performance. He was kind of Cruise-esque in a lot of ways. No wonder they were, you know, buddies.
Yeah, I suppose so at the time.
And same kind of vibe, that devil may care, you know, youth will prevail over just, you know, by the vitality and impetuousness of their characters. Anyways, the second one, I used to really hold in high standard, and I still do like a lot, especially because Christian Slater's fun in it and Alan Rock, and it's just a better made film. But still, it's not as good as I remembered it. I was kind of let down when I watched him.
Just you know, just save your time. Watch 1313 Billy the Kid, and you'll be much better off.
And if you know what that is, Trevor can be reached at Trevor at moviemavericks.com. Let's move on and talk about the passing of Oscar winning director John Avildsen, who died at 81 years of age on Friday night after a battle with pancreatic cancer, I believe, or prostate cancer. It might have been. It was a form of cancer, unfortunately, and he'd been struggling with this for a while. There is a documentary coming out about him that was well in the works and already completed that played at many film festivals. It'll be out August 1st, titled Underdog. You know, when you text me about this, this is now, you know, my ultimate fear is like obviously my parents and my family, my friends passing, but Stallone is very close on that branch. This was getting a little close to that branch, you know what I mean? I'm like, ooh.
Time's ticking down, I know.
You know, we're all getting a little mortal here.
I feel it. Mm-mm-mm.
And, I mean, this is a director, you know, you said he hadn't done much, right? That's kind of your
Well, he hasn't. Well, I mean, clearly in a long time he hasn't done much, right? He's done nothing really past the 90s.
Did some television work, I believe. No? I thought he was directing this.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think he's done anything since the 90s, to be honest with you. But really, you know, he's done The Karate Kids and two Rocky movies. And other than that, I mean, there are a few other movies, but in reality, that's what most people are going to remember him for, right?
You know, I saw Lean On Me in a theater with my old man when I was a young kid, probably 8 or 9 years old. And it was not highly regarded, but my dad loved that movie. And it was the first time I remember Morgan Freeman seeing him in anything, especially at that age. And people were like clapped and like applauded and were crying in that. That was like a full blown like movie going experience. That was definitely a crowd pleaser, even though it's not well regarded and it's not even like talked about today. You can't even find it, I don't think, on any cable.
Well, who's watching cable?
This thing that came out of your television, and when you sometimes it would descramble.
What the
Remember
hell?
That? Pre cable?
That was only naked stuff.
No, that's not true. You know, I had a
cable.
My buddy had like a wavering Cinemax that would come in and out. I mean, we're talking so long.
Yeah, right. I know.
That one
joking.
Night, he and I waveringly watched a signal of A Christmas Story and Conan the Barbarian, fucking double feature that probably gave us tumors and brain cancer. But, man, back before the internet, we did a lot of stupid shit. Now we just watch people do other stupid shit. So we'll talk about James Gunn, director flying high with Guardians Volume 2, which is amongst my favorite films of the year right now as it stands halfway through this.
Easily, right?
Easily. For me,
yeah, that's not hard.
You know, just a hair above Wonder Woman for me. And I liked, you know, like I said, Wonder Woman more than you. I know you, I think Wonder Woman probably sits just a little bit below Guardians for you. Is that right?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, yes. Wonder Woman was good, but Guardians was great, so.
Yeah. You know, the way that people are talking about Wonder Woman, Guardians hit me with the, you know, like, I've always been a sucker for the father-son stuff.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Yeah. Yeah, and it's clearly Wonder Woman's hit a lot of people pretty hard, but yeah, opposite for me as well.
Yeah, and understandably for, you know, what it's, the story it's telling and the relatability and all that kind of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
Both great films. James Gunn, though, the director who you started off in independent films and writing films, is for Troma, really, with the Corman-esque budgets. Mm-hmm. And then became a writer. He wrote Scooby-Doo, the original. Mm-hmm. Did you read that it was R-rated at one point? Did he confirm this?
Yeah. There's an R-rated cut out somewhere that you'll never see, unfortunately.
He was saying
sounds amazing. I mean, I do remember. This is known for a while.
I haven't known any about this. Tell me about it. What
really?
You know
no, they
this?
Do because I knew they covered up a lot of cleavage in the movie. Right. There's like weird, there's actually really bad CGI throughout a lot of the movie. And there's weird, like, there's like weird cuts and things and kind of like weird jokes. I don't know. I do like that movie though. Even the PG-13 one. And yeah, I like this. I like Scooby-Doo too as well.
You know what? Those movies play like gangbusters with my godson and my goddaughter who are 4 and 2 years old.
Yeah. So ultimately, I think the PG, you know, not going R with it makes a lot more, hell of a lot more sense. But I still really would like to see that cut of it.
Why not have had the dual cut, you know, at that point?
I don't think you can with Scooby-Doo, right? I don't think you could ever release that because it would tarnish the name, right?
Even as like a, you know, like what they did with Ron Burgundy when they found all that extra footage and they recobbled together that kind of second movie. Remember that? It was like,
yeah, I don't think you could do that at all with it because you couldn't have an R-rated version of Scooby-Doo, right?
I think they could have.
Forever dirty.
It would have been fun.
Yeah, I would like to see it, but I don't think they'll ever release it for that reason alone. I don't think they'd be willing to tarnish that franchise like that. I could be wrong. Maybe they will release it.
Maybe that's what the reboot version will be, a little bit more edgy.
Be nice to see. I like seeing alternate cuts, and that would be a totally different movie. So
that would have been more Ted, you know, along the lines.
Yeah,
of
a lot more pot smoking, right? Which was hinted at.
Yeah,
yeah, you can hinted see it. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the latest victim for the Merc with the Mouth, that is Mr. Deadpool, who has now long since retired from his dominance at the box office, and this movie is easily available, playing on HBO Go or wherever, you know, it's widely, widely distributed right now. Mm-hmm. And just recently, a guy was arrested for his part when the film came out last year, was that February 2016, for uploading it or live streaming it onto Facebook Live.
Yeah, put it on Facebook. Why would you even do that? Isn't that just obvious?
There's so much shit like that that goes on with UFC fights and boxing matches and all this kind of stuff that maybe he just thought he was
not going to get caught. It's your Facebook, right?
You've been to pirate sites. I've been to pirate sites. I mean, you go to these things. Hey, we're not watching anything. I didn't admit to anything over here. We've been. And it always amazes me, like, there's a comment section and people will, like, you know, be like, this movie sucks or something. And it's like linked to their Facebook or like their LinkedIn account or whatever it may be. And you're like, my goodness, nobody is giving a fuck anymore. Not one single.
Well, this should be proof that you should. I mean, there's lots of this that happens, so it's not something I certainly wouldn't post any pirated movies.
I got to tell you story here. My cousins were going to school at University of Nevada, Reno, and they were renting a house, and they had Charter, which was the internet service up there. And mm-hmm. Charter's known to be real, real strict about, like, throttling. They do all sorts of weird shit up there. They throttle the internet. They, like, they totally mm-hmm. watch what you're doing with their usage of internet. And they got a letter that said somebody in the house, because they had roommates, was downloading a movie from the site and stopped doing it, this, that, and the other. And it said what the movie was. And the best part about it was that the fucking movie was Footloose. And not even the original one. It was the remake.
Right, it would have to be the remake, yeah. girl roommate?
could you just not have just watched the original? Could you not have walked down to the red box? I'm sure you could have found it. It was one of those things. But yeah, so this, like you said, people get popped for this kind of stuff. And it doesn't just go away. And so the fact is, now that this is so widely available, how much of an asshole do you have to feel like? Because it's all for naught. You know, what did you really do?
Yeah, I know. I mean, that video window rolls up pretty quickly nowadays. Although for some stuff, it does seem like it takes a long time still.
I heard an interesting fact that I didn't know, that today in common blockbuster filmmaking or anything that has, you know, widely promoted budgets and that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. that they deliver the Blu-ray the same day that they deliver the final cut of the movie. Hmm. You know, the Blu-ray is delivered the second the final cut is done, that it's a lock print, and they start running prints that they have that ready to go, and they just sit on it for a couple months, and they start shipping it.
Well, that would be impossible.
Well, they were saying that all supplementary materials are already done, edited.
Well, that might be true. Supplementary stuff. But they need to, they would have to have some sort of a cut. I don't know. I mean, you could do that, but they would have to take it. It would probably be a couple days after.
A lot of the times you listen, I don't know if you listen to commentaries anymore on these Blu-rays, mm-hmm. which it's hard to keep up with these. I mean, everything comes with like 9 hours.
They have to color correct those Blu-rays, right? Specifically for video.
But a lot of the times as they're recording stuff, it's like, this hasn't premiered yet in theaters and we're talking about it. Like, you know, we're talking about some of this. So a lot of this stuff is hypothetical that they're speaking of. It's recorded as, you know, like I listened to one, I think it was Transformers 4, and Bay was, you know, like, he's like, I've had no separation from this film.
But that means that there is a final cut. They had already locked cut at that point, right? If you're talking about commentary and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure, that's already a locked cut, right? So if there's a difference between, I guess, locking the cut and delivering that, right? Because after you lock the cut, you have to still do a bunch of work.
Well, I mean, picture lock, I should say. So
that's what I'm saying too, but there's still a bunch of work to be done after that.
Right.
But you're saying they deliver the Blu-ray at the same time? I don't think they could.
All the supplementary materials, everything's done. And then when they finally, on release day, he's like, I was told that the thing's totally done, ready to go.
Oh, well, that might be true.
By the time it's in theaters, that the Blu-ray is sitting on, you know.
I would believe that, yeah.
Ready to roll. And they're just sitting on it for a couple months. That's why the window's gotten shorter and shorter and shorter.
It almost has, but yeah, when you think about it, it kind of almost has to, right? Yeah.
Well, especially with all those, you know, you start seeing pre-orders now and they actually have like pictures of what the Blu-ray looks like and all that, you know, the back.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
And you can literally pre-order a lot of that shit. Like,
day of almost.
It's crazy that they roll that out that soon.
Hey, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with reviews of 5 new films.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
If you like intelligent and smart movie discussion,
Face is a zombie movie.
How did he write a book if he doesn't have an arm?
Or want to hear the latest news on your favorite actor?
Talk some Julianne Moore, I guess.
Whales have more films than Zoe Saldana.
Check out the Lambcast, where no question is too risque.
Rachel, do you have a mouth?
Check out the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Lamb, the large association of movie blogs, which can be found at largeassmovieblogs.blogspot.com. Si habla español.
Hola y bienvenido a la
Lambcast. Okay.
All right. So, I saw The Mummy this weekend.
The Mummy,
and a movie that I kept thinking was going to, in financial terms, was going to bounce back and have a great second weekend and really show people that it's going to play like a horror film and not just like a regular tentpole blockbuster.
I really wanted to like this. I was hyped about this, and then you hit me with the bad text about it, man.
It is a mess. I always feel like I have to precede the when I, you know, talk anything about bad about Tom Cruise, that I am an uber Tom Cruise fan. I mean, I love Tom Cruise. One of my, you know, top 3 favorite actors ever. And I can't remember any point in his career when he's made 2 shitty movies in a row. Maybe there's a stinker here, a stinker there, or something that doesn't live up to it. But his films used to have a stamp of quality, a seal of approval that kind of comes along with movies that are from Denzel Washington or from DiCaprio. You know, they're kind of like vetted. They feel like the product is the best thing it could be by the time it reaches the screen. And Jack Reacher was like a TV, the sequel, was like a TV low point to me in his career. And this movie, even though it's polished and not TV ready, is actually worse and is quite possibly the worst movie he's ever been in, even though it contains all the shit that you would think would be in a movie like this. It just somehow doesn't work. It's so conceptually flawed that it sucks. 10 minutes into this, so much is happening and so much action goes on in the first 30 minutes. And I had a feeling that I was like, oh, this is going to be a long lull here. And of course, there's a lot of exposition. This movie is every scene has exposition, has his character. No wonder they're like, oh, he's lost in the movie. His character's, he literally is going, what? Who? What? I haven't seen him this confused since Eyes Wide Shut. It's like that kind of performance in a blockbuster where he's constantly behind the eight ball, doesn't know what the fuck is going on. I mean, sure, the special effects are good. There's a couple sequences that really do work. I liked the plane sequence. I really liked him swimming away. There's a sequence underwater with the
You liked him when he got all wet?
Zombies. But like everything has a been there, done that feel. And it's so obviously constructed for maximum
impact. And there's nothing new, right?
It's calculated and it's conceptually flawed. It's just such a miscalculation. And I wanted to like it every step of the way. I could not find a way into this movie to even give one single shit about it. And it wasn't just me. I mean, you could see like an overall kind of like malaise hit the screening. And when it was over, it makes 107 minutes feel like 2.5+ hours because there's so much fucking exposition in every scene. Because they're trying to do so much and set up shit and reference this and bring him in. And Jekyll and Hyde or Dr. Jekyll... briefly turns into like a Cockney version, you know, of him. Turns into like the real asshole Russell Crowe. I feel like the phone throwing prick, you know, when he's Hyde. He comes out and he's like he's like Samuel L. Jackson in what was his name? Nick Cage.
Cannon?
what's his character's name? Nick Cage? Who's the Avengers?
Nick Fury.
Thank you. Nick Cage. Nick Cage is an actor. Wait, Luke Cage.
I like the Nick Cannon better.
Yeah, so does
Nick Cannon in The Mummy. All right.
That might have worked.
Let's go.
Because I'll tell you what, somewhere right now, Brendan Fraser is eating a pint of ice cream and laughing his ass off.
Yeah, he's happy he wasn't in this one at all, huh?
It's not. Even Jake Johnson's in it, who has lost a lot of weight, and you sent me a great article about Cruz and him getting along on set and their workout regimen, but he's wasted.
Yeah, what's he like? I like that guy a lot. Is he at all? I mean, I'm guessing he's the comedic part of the movie, right?
It's all comedic. That's the weird thing about this movie. Everybody's cracking. Everybody wants to be the comedic and the straight guy. It's so bizarre. I've set such a low bar for it. I know you're gonna watch it and go, it wasn't that bad.
Well, I'm also gonna watch it at home because I'm smarter than this. Because if I go to the theater and see this. I'm probably gonna have the same experience you did. You know, it's gonna feel wasted up there.
It's not small. It's not a small film. It's only small in ideas and it's small in story. It takes place
and
in
it's
a very
small
time
in
frame.
The height of the main actor.
I guess there's a couple scenes where my girlfriend mentioned some things, but you know that's never bothered me because I think of all, he's 55 years old. The guy is an ageless wonder. His physique is fucking fantastic at 55. He's damn near buck naked in one scene. You're like, good God, man. Like you
it's
fucking
all
not
CGI.
Age?
It's all CGI.
Oh my goodness! I mean, he's in
you
better
know,
shape.
You
than...
know that they touch him up for sure.
I don't know.
I guarantee it. It's probably in his contracts.
I would hope so because at this point, him and Van Damme are the same age, and Van Damme looks like an 85-year-old and
yeah,
Cruise.
Well, Van Damme's
is jacked.
The heart of life. That's for
yeah.
sure.
So Ooh. The magic beans he's been eating, but stay away from The Mummy. It is dog shit. My one of my worst. Yeah, it's. As bad as Baywatch for different reasons. Stay away from both those. Really
I will
summer.
Be watching both.
Yeah. So you saw King Kong. What's up with this? I've only
I
seen the
saw.
First
it's not
minutes.
King Kong.
Yeah.
It's Kong Skull Island, which is important because it's not King Kong. I mean, King Kong's kind of in it. A much larger King Kong, like a giant King Kong, but it's not the King Kong story at all. But surprisingly, a fun summer popcorn movie, I thought, you know, it really doesn't attempt to be anything more than just what it is. People going to an island and an extremely giant monkey or ape, you know, running around attacking them.
Did you like that it was set in the 70s? Was that necessary or was that
a gimmick? It's fantastic. The whole Vietnam stuff was great. I mean, it's a gimmick, but it worked.
Oh, I thought the Godzilla movie was dog shit. This is obviously better than that, is what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, I would agree with you. This is a more funner version of the Godzilla movie, basically. This is exactly the way I would put it. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's not like, you know, it's not a great movie by any means, and it certainly doesn't do anything with the Vietnam War or anything. It's just a nice setting to have that kind of music and have those kind of military scenes and have the military guys involved and stuff. And I don't know, like, it's just a decent little action movie, you know?
Yeah, you said that it was, it reminded you of like a 90s popcorn deal, like the 90s blockbusters.
Lot, yeah. But yeah, like a throwaway one, you know?
Yeah, but they were throwaways then, but you watch them now and they have such professionalism, it's hard to not respect them even more. And I just watched Con Air the other day, which was, it's been ludicrous since the day I saw it, and that movie, mm-hmm. you know, just revels in its ludicrous. And it takes it to another fucking level every time I watch it.
Yeah.
And I just enjoy it. It's such disposable entertainment. Yeah, I gotta check this one out. I love the posters, the art they had on this, especially the one that looked like Apocalypse Now. It was like instead of Marlon Brando's face, it was the ape's face.
It just, if you know, well, I mean, they do kind of, Samuel Jackson kind of goes down that road in this, but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't like fully like say, like go that way. You know, it's not like, oh, this is like, we're trying to do this, we're trying to do that. It's just like, you know, that's part of it. And then there's another part and like the group splits up and stuff. So there's plenty going on. It gets a little long winded at the end, of course. And the end fight sequence between Kong and there's other monsters and stuff on the island. It's like, okay, you know, let's wrap this up. We've seen this a million times.
I don't remember the ending of movies dragging on for as long as they have. I know I bitch about
the
length
of movies. It's the ending, really. That if there's ever a final fight or something, God, it goes on forever, and it's never very good.
I really don't remember when this started, though. Can you recall?
I honestly don't know.
I mean, I remember when blockbusters like this kind of took their shape, but I can't recall when these like third act finales that went on for an extra 20 minutes with CGI visual orgasms.
Well, I would guess a lot of the stuff started around like Steven Sommers era, right? And even a little before that with Spielberg.
Yeah, with the Van Helsing stuff, I would kind of look at that.
The Mummy, Mummy Returns. You're looking at like Jurassic Park 2, stuff like that. You know, sometimes it works really well. Like we were talking about Guardians of the Galaxy 2 earlier, which has a long fight sequence thing at the end that I thought worked. I was hooked on it. But other times, you know, to me, you get like a Wonder Woman ending where it's just like, all right, let's wrap this up because this is going nowhere.
It's too many beats. I think that should always be the note. Too many beats.
Yeah, they try to make it too big. And then there's always that in the middle of the fight where, you know, the hero has to be downed. And it's been so going on for so long at that point. It's like, oh, my God. Like, that break in the fight is almost like, is the movie over, please?
You know? Uh-huh. Always. But I then, always think that.
Nope, they're going back out. He's got to rise up and fight again. It's like, oh, my gosh. Yeah, so that's in this movie, too. It's in everything, I guess. It's inescapable.
Yeah, it's just the current mold for filmmaking. Well, I saw Pirates 5 this last week, and I was pleasantly surprised, actually.
Really?
This is a series that has snuck up on me and kind of regained my respect, even though looking back, it never fully lost it, because I loved the first one, was lukewarm on the second one, and didn't care for the third one, really liked the fourth one, and now kind of like this fifth one. So I went back and looked at the second and third one recently, and they have grown on me immensely. I think the second one is actually really underrated. And the third one, while it is bloated at 2 hours and 50 minutes, almost a three-hour-long Pirates movie, it does have a certain strange charm to it. There are oddities in it that are worth – especially that beginning when the little miniature hymns are running around and – there's a lot of strange homages, and
it's exactly like the Matrix sequels, you know, which grow on me as well, because it's like when you first see them, you have that high expectation set by the original, right? And there's such a fucking letdown from that shit that you just pissed. But you like the characters, and you like the world so much, and they're fine movies, you know, they're really not the most horrid things in the world. So you watch them a lot, and then they grow on you.
Exactly. And I thought the last Pirates was pretty well done, especially for a one-off. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a good little one-off. I liked him and Penelope Cruz.
So
the blow cast mates getting back with this.
It's a little worse than that, a little bit.
I would say just a hair under the last one, but nowhere near as bad as what you might be led to believe, you know, with the Rotten Tomatoes score. Everything's based on a Rotten Tomatoes score nowadays. You know, it's first of all, let me address that fact real quick. This Rotten Tomatoes thing is out of fucking control. The last real critic that died was Richard Schickel from Time Magazine. I mean, there's a couple others that have still been doing. I think Peter Travers from Rolling Stone. But after Ebert passed away, and now you got the guy from Time that passed away, give me a break. Movie reviewing, we review movies, is not what it fucking was. So to listen to Rotten Tomatoes is a joke. And the fact that it hurts movies, dissuades people from possibly seeing a movie that they might want to see.
I don't think it has as big of a role, though, as people say. Well, look at All Eyes on Me. I mean, I don't know that it's necessarily that. I think it's word of mouth that hurts it more than anything else.
Or helps it, because look at Eyes on Me.
Or helps it, yeah.
You can, and 47 Meters Down, which, you know,
yeah, I mean, that's how you get horrible Rotten Tomato scores. And, well, just look at the audience reviews on there versus the film critics reviews. They're almost always more positive, like wildly more positive. I think The Mummy had like a cinema, a B cinema score, right? And that's bad word of mouth. If that shit doesn't get an A, it's not good word of mouth.
Which is unbelievable.
Which is crazy, right?
Pirates 5, Johnny Depp's doing his thing. Getting back to the movie here briefly, it goes on a bit too long, of course, especially at 2 hours. I think this is the shortest one at 2 hours and 9 minutes, but still. It wraps itself up in about 2 hours, but that last fight scene, especially this, I'm not giving anything away, but Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley make a very brief reappearance. I know they touted their reentry into the series kind of a bit. It's extremely brief, and that is supposed to give you some sort of finality to these characters within the series. So it is worth seeing because Depp's shtick and whatnot. But my odd complaint about this movie, I know I complained about the continuity in Baywatch, and I got a bone to pick with this one. I don't know if it was the screening I was in. It's hard to believe it was that because I think things are all digital now, so I don't know about the framing. But I felt the framing in this movie was odd. That there were shots missing, that I wasn't clear sometimes what direction a person was speaking in to another character and why I thought this character was over here. Also, the it wasn't, you know, people's heads were cut off is the best way to describe it. It was oddly framed in a couple, and I don't know if that was, I thought it maybe was the projectionist, but like I said, I don't think that's possible anymore to fuck a movie like that.
That's almost impossible. It is possible, but it would be extremely difficult, like, to do that. Yeah, they said it and forget it at this point. You know, either, and the thing can change from the aspect ratios. So it's real easy not to fuck it up. I don't know. But I guess I could.
Possibly that's what happened. But I was supported in thinking that maybe something was off with the movie and thinking that, well, where was that shot?
So how were they framed then? It was like just above eyebrows or something?
It was cutting off the tops of their heads. It was like just bad film school framing. I can't explain it. When you see this film, you'll realize that everything's medium shots and they're not even, you know, it's between a close-up and a medium all the time. It felt like an odd indecision on some sort of filmmaking level. I don't know. I don't know what it could be, but who knows? Maybe that was just my interpretation of it.
It's just mouths speaking.
I did see this in an absolutely empty theater, and this was one of the loudest movies I have ever sat in my fucking life. The roar of these boats in the can, I don't know if they pumped it up because it was a Bruckheimer movie or if they were just fucking with me, because I think I was like literally the only person in the entire...
They just turned the volume up
like in the entire movie theater, I think, because I bought a ticket, and like, these guys were like kicking it in their office.
Let's give this guy a real show.
Like, oh, this prick comes, and I got to hang out until midnight. Yeah, one for pirates, please. Like,
dial this up to 11.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll show this dickhead. He ain't falling asleep in this movie. There will be no rest. All right, let's get on to Deepwater Horizon, a film that I saw back in October. And I liked it, didn't love it, thought it missed the mark a little bit, but great score.
Yeah, I really thought that I would have no interest in this after seeing the trailer and that this was going to be a terrible movie. But I got to admit, I'm right there with you. It's actually a decent movie, and there are times when it's like, damn, this is a good movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, it's got some huge problems. But it did make me want to see Patriots Day and, you know, put me back on the Peter Berg bandwagon, so to speak, at least, because he's so capable as far as like an action director goes. And this movie has just fantastic action in it, and it's so interesting. Like, even when they're just doing the tests when they first get to the oil rig and stuff, and they're just running through the tests, and you're seeing all the crew like do their thing. It's like, fuck, this is super interesting, and it shouldn't be.
it's Paul Greengrass documentary style. It's almost like like the Bourne Identity, but it's to me that the film had the feeling of a horror film in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, it builds suspense so well.
Kurt Russell was great in that movie. I thought I loved his concerned. I mean, he was I thought he played that concerned middleman extremely well. Wahlberg was kind of there to sell the movie in a lot of ways, I thought.
Well, it was definitely an ensemble cast, and it was shot like that. You know, even though Wahlberg's name's on the front, and we, you know, meet him kind of first and foremost, and he's really the one that takes us to the rig. This is clearly an ensemble cast. Wahlberg disappears for a good portion of the movie.
And that's what the story calls for.
And that's why why I think it's so fucking good, because you get to like see everybody, you get to know all these different people. It has a great cast. You know, John Malkovich, obviously.
Scott Glenn. Mentioned
Kurt Russell. It's just one of those things where it's like, damn, I.
It makes you wish it was a little bit better, though, doesn't it?
Oh, it makes me wish it was a lot better, because it's right there. You know, you can see that there's a great movie in there, but it's just not quite there. Yeah.
It's that. I mean, that's my thing. Is like, it keeps attempting to be this great fucking movie, and it's like, ooh, we're almost there, and then it settles for being a good one. You go, hey, that was a pretty good movie, you know?
And the ending is a bit, I don't know. One thing I didn't like about this movie is how it really went overboard and became an action movie, especially towards the end.
Off the rig.
Yeah, then you see the actual guy and hear him talk about stuff, and you realize, my God, did this go too far? Clearly not what happened in reality.
They needed to give that character a moment. And that was his moment.
They really didn't, and they shouldn't. I thought he had his moment throughout the whole time when he was going through picking up people and helping them out. You know, I was like, oh my gosh. I don't know.
I feel that was a backup by the studio saying, hey, we got Mark Wahlberg. We got to give him a scene to do something here.
Yeah, I know.
But good movie. And I do want to see Patriots Day even more now.
Good, yeah.
I will check it out. And Peter Berg is the man when it comes to doing that kind of filmmaking. It reminded me of how strong things like The Kingdom were. Lone Survivor.
Yes, I know. Fuck, I always forget about The Kingdom. I always remember The Kingdom, but I always forget about it. But The Kingdom is so fucking good.
That's probably the overlooked one in all his filmography.
It really is. God, I should watch that again. I just like his pacing and shit. Like, the dude's just like even if he's not necessarily directing a full-on action movie, like, he's definitely directing action, you know?
Well, he's not getting any credit for the fact that Very Bad Things was pretty much remade with females this last week and released as Rough Night.
Right. Wow. So,
strange. All right. Let's move on and talk about The Duel. What's this all about? This is the Woody Harrelson, Liam Neeson, or is this a...
This is, well, it's a Liam.
It's a Hemsworth, though.
It is a Hemsworth. Yeah, this is a Western. Liam Hemsworth plays this Texas Ranger who has to go out to this secluded town run by Woody Harrelson, and it's like this crazy, Woody Harrelson's like this crazy preacher guy kind of in charge of this town. It's almost very cultish like and he's, by the way, you learn this in the beginning, Woody Harrelson has killed Liam Hemsworth's father when he was a young kid, and his character witnessed this. And so he gets this job to go up there and do this. But he's a Texas Ranger, you know, through and through. So he's not there for revenge or anything. He's there to investigate the murders of these Mexicans, right? Whose bodies keeps floating down the river. And it all takes place in Texas. There's on the brink of war with Mexico because one of the general's daughters has disappeared in this area. You know, they're finding bodies. They aren't happy. So he has to infiltrate this weird cultish group of people and find out what's going on.
So is it a Western horror film?
It's a kind of. I mean, it's a really weird movie. Woody Harrelson's intriguing. Really good. Yeah, well, this is the problem with it, is that it's super intriguing. You're like, what the fuck is going to happen? And then you find out what's happening and you're like, fuck, why is that what it is?
Is it one of those things that's less interesting when you find out
why is that
it?
What it is, but why did they say that for the end? Do you know how boring the fucking movie is up until this point? Like, put that shit like out in the open. Like, we could have had a whole action Western shit thing going on. Yeah, I don't want to ruin it for anyone, so I won't tell you what the twist is and stuff. But it's pretty, I mean, it's fucked up, obviously, but it's fairly mundane in today's world of bad guys and movies and things. It's certainly something, it's a plot that is used a lot. Even in the 90s, it was used a lot.
So are you recommending it or not recommending it?
I would slightly not recommend it. But if you're bored and there's really nothing to stream, take a look at it, you know, especially if you like Westerns. I don't know. Like I say, Woody Harrelson was really good.
That other Western right now is streaming on Amazon with, what's his name, Ethan Hawke and Travolta in The Valley of Violence. That just came streaming onto Amazon. Yeah, I've been wanting to.
That one looked good.
Yeah, that one did look interesting. That looked kind of along the same lines of a guy drunk with power or some sort of, maybe not mystical stuff, but some sort of madman run amok.
Yeah, I mean, not as good as 1313 Billy the Kid, but, you know.
The second time on today's show, Trevor has guided you. And once again, Trevor at moviemavericks.com.
Check it out. So I think it's streaming on Amazon. Check it out. My dad tried to watch it the other day. He was like, ooh, Billy the Kid. They've very smartly removed the 1313 from those. Mm. So now it just says Billy the Kid, and it's like a mystical movie where Billy the Kid has to fight ghost things or something. It actually sounds like a real good movie, which I've never seen that one. But
I think it's the only one I think I've seen where the guy was like walking for 5 minutes in the desert bare-chested and then decides to hop in a warm spring before anything happened. I was like, oh, it's a 77-minute movie, and we're 7 minutes in, and so far nothing's happened. But this young gentleman walk around rather naked. I was like, oh, yeah. That's what this is. Okay, you got me. You got me. You bait and switched me. Netflix pulled the old Bill Cosby on me. All right, tell me about Into the Forest, please.
This is another weird one. This is a couple years old. I watched the streaming again. Starring Ellen Page, Evan Rachel Wood. It's a post-apocalyptic movie. Kind of. the plot basically is there's a massive power outage that goes on for ever, seemingly, right? That's the apocalypse there. And these two sisters essentially learn to survive on their own in isolation. They live up in the mountains, in the woods, with their father. And so they're far away anyways. They're kind of used to the isolation, I guess, which makes it easier. But it also makes it easier to film something like this because you don't actually see the outside world. You don't see like what's happening with the power outage. Yeah, well, they go into town once, you know. People do show up very sparingly at their house here and there just to push the plot forward. And that's about it. So really, I can't decide what this movie is really about, because you can take this in a really bad way. I mean, essentially, this movie could be taken as men are evil and women are fantastic. And because these sisters essentially learn to live on their own without men, right? Their father dies. That was nothing to do with the power outage. And nothing that happens in this movie would have changed if there was power. That's the thing that gets me. And so their father figure is now removed. Now it's the two girls. The one girl's boyfriend comes up to see her and tries to take her away, you know, in a sense. She decides she wants to go with him, and the sisters are splitting up. Like, he's, you know, luring her away. And then in the end, she decides, no, I have to go back and be with my sister. She goes back to be with the sister. So the boyfriend's out of it. So you had a man come in and try to lure her away, right? The other sister, I'm just going to ruin this movie because I don't think anyone's going to watch this. The other sister gets raped by this guy, who's a fucking weirdo guy, and she gets pregnant over it, right? And so the movie ends essentially in this very weird quasi-incestual relationship, which isn't sexual, but with these two sisters, and they're going to raise a young baby boy.
I think
they're
going to
raise
the
young baby boy, you know, in the right way, because they're two women who have learned to survive on their own. You know, and the movie doesn't outright say that.
Well, look at
looking
the
back on it. Yeah. When you look at the casting, it's directed by Patricia Rosema as well. I don't know if anyone probably doesn't know who that is, but she has directed quite a lot of stuff. but it just, you know, I don't know.
You're calling it what it is. It sounds like if you pull it out of that, and by your description, it sounds like those themes, or especially that ending, is in your face with it. So that sounds like a dog shit movie. What's that on? Amazon right now? Where do you see that at?
Yeah, I think it's streaming on, it might be on Netflix.
So you're obviously not
recommending that. The acting is, you know, top notch. But yeah, the story, and it's so slow. Like the one girl's a ballerina dancer, and there's just like, she dances forever. You know, it's a lot of that melancholy music and just shots of shit. And there's nothing for them to do. They're out in the middle of nowhere. So there's nothing interesting.
I think the high point is kind of like power outage movies for me, with The Trigger Effect. The David Koepp movie.
Which is a great movie, yeah.
And that's a movie that actually uses the tension of that situation very well. I think that's streaming right now on Showtime, Anytime. Hmm. So I'm going to use that as Trevor's streaming online pick of the week, since he didn't have one. You can use my homework. It's cool.
Yeah, so I don't know. This is based on a book as well. I'm not really willing to say that it was a full out man hating movie, but it certainly did have that vibe. It felt like it, you know.
All right. What are you gonna pick this week for your online pick? What do you got?
I don't know. I don't have one. What do you watch online, man? There's nothing. Well, shit. I just Duel. You want to watch Duel? You want to watch Into the Forest?
You know, not after you described it. I mean, he doesn't even want to watch it. No. Your dog is said, "Fuck that."
There's very rarely do I come across anything good online streaming anymore.
I watched Starring Adam West, which was just put back on HBO Go after Adam West passed. This is about a comedian that he was friends with, who was a big fan of his and was trying to get him a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and his successful attempt at doing so. Kind of hard to believe Adam West didn't have one already, especially for being around for so long. But interesting documentary, and gets, of course, a new light when somebody passes away, and you look at it from a different perspective, and you kind of feel bad that the guy was he was in on the joke, but there is some sort of melancholy aspect to the fact that his career was a joke or mocked in a lot of ways.
And what is this on?
HBO Go.
That's what I thought. This was the one on HBO.
Yeah, pretty good. All right, let's get to the trailer part of today's show.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay, let's bust through these trailers.
That's what she said. Let's talk about Black Panther, which had its teaser premiere during the NBA Finals, causing quite a roar with social media and the most chatted about thing. I watched it. I got a chance. I didn't watch it during the game. I watched it later with the full effect here on the big screen at my house and the surround sound. I can't believe they make me want to see this movie. I have no interest in a Black Panther story. I want to see this now. This looks to me like fucking like The Phantom, basically. Remember The Phantom, the 1996 movie with Billy Zane?
Yeah, it does remind me of that, actually.
I want to see this. This looks goofy and glorious and fun.
Hopefully. Because it looks a little unclear as to what the fuck it is. It's very weird, man. This is one of the weirder Marvel trailers I've seen. I mean, all the different weird people that are in this, it's just weird.
This is going to be a fantastic movie. What's going on right now with Wonder Woman, I think we're going to hear a lot of that kind of talk with Black Panther in regards to having an African-American director, cast, you know, all the creative forces behind it.
But that has nothing to do with the movie being a great, amazing movie or not.
No, but I think it'll be solid in the first time that there's been that, you know, that kind of figure.
Sure. Well, it's a Marvel movie, so as long as they keep up with what they've been doing, then yeah, it will be enjoyable. But I'm just hoping, I still think it's an odd trailer, and there's a lot of weird oddity things in it that I just am not sure how that plays into the overall story, and if it's just not a little too weird.
Thinking that trailers nowadays continue to actually tell the story,
right?
That doesn't actually work anymore. I don't even trust trailers that like they had those shots in the movie anymore.
Yeah, you know what? That's true as well. I mean, this movie did tell the story, but there's no guarantee that a lot of the shots are in the movie. That's true, too. Some of that shit might be out of it.
Back in the old days, you could kind of piece together a movie by trailer. Now you're like, maybe that's what I'm
going to
see.
Well, I told you it did tell you what the basis of the story was, but there could be there's a lot of side things that happen. They shoot so much now. There's so many like side little stories and things that they just cut out, but they put in the trailer anyways.
What about the trailer for Daddy's Home 2, the sequel to the surprise smash hit starring Marky Mark?
I think this looks fantastic.
Doesn't this look hilarious?
As the first one. I think this is a smart Meet the Fockers type setup. You know, it's really the only way it can go. And I don't know. I didn't know who was in this at first, aside from obviously Ferrell and Wahlberg. But when I saw Mel Gibson, I was like, yeah, that's his dad. And then...
Johnny Lithgow.
And then John Lithgow fucking rolls down the shit. It's like, oh my god, that is fucking Mark Wahlberg's dad.
Yeah,
and when they kiss on the mouth and shit. This trailer had me cracking up, and I can't wait for this movie, because if it's anything like the first movie, which that trailer had me cracking up, there's a lot of comedy hopefully in this that didn't make it in the trailer that will make the movie even that much more enjoyable.
Yeah, I thought the trailer for the first movie sucked. I didn't want to see it at all.
Really?
And I begrudgingly watched it, and I loved the fact that they didn't give away everything. I think there was one funny thing to me in the trailer that with the first one, that was when he went through the motorcycle through the house.
Right.
But this thing, from the jump, like you said, I knew Mel Gibson was in it, but he's walking down the stairs, and I thought, shit. But like, that's already preceded by the whole interaction with Spielberg or with Ferrell and Wahlberg about the bake and homemade cookies and that thing you do when you repeat it and then you shake your head. Wahlberg, they're pretty much playing like a gay couple.
I know,
domesticated gay couple. It's hilarious.
Wahlberg plays a fantastic like character. He's basically a housebroken, like just browbeaten, like thug, like in a way, you know, like that's kind of his character's thing. And he's great at it, you know, with the whininess. And like, I think he's a really good in comedies, surprisingly.
Yeah, well, it was almost Ted-esque, I thought.
Yeah,
this one,
exactly.
Because he's not trying to be Mr. Tough Guy all the time anymore, because he has Mel Gibson apparently to do that. But even when Will Ferrell and his dad kiss, and Gibson, when Wahlberg says to his dad, well, they haven't seen each other for a long time. And he goes, it's been 2 weeks.
They kiss on the lips and shit.
Oh, I love
it. It's funny.
All right, it was a great, great trailer. And I think this is going to be a huge hit, even bigger. And a nice little out of nowhere series. But like you said, you did make the connection to Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers. And that's exactly what this is turning into. Like, let's talk about First Kill, a movie that gives Hayden Christensen top billing over Bruce Willis, which is almost unforgivable sin.
Well, it makes sense when you see the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, this is a trailer that I think, one, gives away a little too much. I feel like I've seen the movie by the time this trailer hits. I wish they didn't give away quite that much in it. And I feel like Bruce Willis is not really in this movie. Did you get that feeling too?
Did I get that feeling? The trailer damn near just tells you.
Yeah, he seems like a side character.
They literally, three-quarters of the way through this trailer, because Bruce Willis is to Hayden Christensen, you ready to go get your kid back? And then Bruce Willis disappears from the trailer as Hayden Christensen fights to get his kid back, and Bruce Willis shows up walking, you know, a couple shots here and there.
However, directed by Stephen C. Miller, which I'm a fan of. I like his other work. I know you said some positive things about his other films, too, and always like to see what he can do with these movies. He's kind of made a career in these Lionsgate. First of all, Lionsgate cut this trailer nicer than they do most of their theatrical cut trailer. I mean, Expendables 3 didn't get this nice of a trailer. So they really pumped up a lot of the stuff in this trailer to make it look exciting and a little bit bigger, I think, than what it truly is. And these are on the level of these direct-to-DVD, straight-to-action flicks. But these things are piling up now, and some of them are actually pretty decent. Mm-hmm. I liked Extraction and Marauders.
Well, is this going to come out in theaters? I mean, it'll have a small run, right?
I think this does have a small run. I think the guild guidelines mandate that it plays in a couple of theaters.
Yeah, but I mean, a bigger run than that, right?
You think so? I'm not sure if it will.
I mean, that's like a couple, that's literally like two or three screens.
Well, I thought maybe like 20, 25 screens across the
Well, that would be
States.
Bigger that'd be bigger than like a contract run then. So that'd be all right. I mean, if it plays, that would be major cities, yeah.
If the fucker played around here, I'd go see it, to be honest with you. I love going and catching, you know.
Yeah,
you
me
and
too.
I
it's
love going and catching movies
movie
on the big screen that feel like they kind of slipped onto the big screen somehow, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah,
not many people saw Alone in the Dark on the big screen, and you and I are amongst those kind of people,
no.
So.
Yeah, I would go see this too. I don't know, just as you say with the trailer, I don't know. I like Hayden Christensen, so.
You like Bruce Willis, so what do you know?
Yeah, but I feel like he's not in it. Although I do like him in this trailer. I guess I like the little bit that he is in this. I haven't always liked the cameos that he's been in for a lot of these, you know, which basically is a cameo, but he's and he really hasn't been good, but he seems to be like Bruce Willis again in this one.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be phoning it in, is what you're saying. And I agree with you. He looks to be engaged for the first time in a while. That could be just good cutting by the trailer and decent filmmaking. So, but props to Stephen C. Miller. Keep him coming. Let's talk about Detroit, which is Catherine Bigelow's latest mm-hmm. film, back with Mark Boll, who she teamed up with The Hurt Locker. This depicts the 1967 riots in Detroit and a specific incident that went down at a hotel. I believe this is based on true events, but fictionalized for obviously for the movie.
Sure.
Changed names and stuff, but this is a pretty fucking intense trailer. I really wanted to see this. This wasn't even on my radar.
Yeah, this trailer is just amazing. And it's just at this point that you just, like, I go see every Catherine Bigelow movie ever. I mean, I've really liked, you know, aside, well, shit, I watched The Hurt Locker, even though I have a lot of problems with it. It's directed well, and, you know, Zero Dark Thirty is really good. And this looks even better.
Yeah, right now, it's very in vogue, obviously, the whole women filmmaker movement and all the attention it's getting. Mm-hmm. Patty Jenkins doing Wonder Woman. Catherine Bigelow should have been offered a franchise, regardless if it had a male or female lead.
Yeah, she would have been. She'd do a good job on a DC movie, I think, especially a gritty one, you know?
I don't think she has any interest in it. She's so hyper.
Probably not. She's doing real life stuff.
Even, you know, Point Break is shot so realistically, it's almost like a documentary at times, you know, with the foot chase sequence and all that kind of stuff. So even
her more
commercial tastes are.
But it's
are
a kinda great style. I mean, this is, you know, this looks like this is shot like a war movie.
Yeah.
Essentially.
You're absolutely right.
You know,
yeah.
It just,
I didn't think
it's
about
just
it like that.
Every action, even every cut in this trailer is just like kind of hits you. And it just feels. I don't know. And there's no bass day crescendos in this, right? There's none of that in this. And it's fucking good because there's a shitload in Kidnap.
Even the fact that I didn't think John Boyega, I thought he was going to be the Mark Hamill of
that. He looks fucking good in this.
I had no idea he could act like this.
Holy shit. Yeah, he looks so good.
It's like a Denzel-esque performance, I thought.
I mean, clearly. I mean, I don't know. The whole cast is fantastic. Yeah, this trailer really made me want to see this movie.
Yeah, surprisingly. I didn't even know it was on coming out. Like the advertising for this has been nil so far, so hopefully this won't get lost and has a primetime award season release date. All right, let's talk about Kidnap, Halle Berry's latest, putting her toe in the water of straight-to-DVD thrillers.
You know, Halle Berry has an Oscar, right? Halle Berry?
Halle Berry might have one too, but Halle Berry definitely does.
She does, right? So why the fuck is she such a bad actress?
I thought she's actually good in this trailer.
Are you out of your mind? Good lord, this is one of the worst fucking. Oh god.
I like these gimmicky thrillers like Cellular. And
I was gonna
die. I kind of like The Call. I kind of like The Call even.
She is just. Isn't like Cellular.
This isn't new either. I mean, Halle Berry's been in these kind of schlock movies since like The Rich Man's Wife. I mean, she has a tendency to these kind of things.
She's just overacting in this, like, to a degree that was incredible to me and hurt me to watch this.
I thought you'd be on board with this one.
No, it was her. I didn't like it.
Well, it's being directed by Luis Prieto, who has helmed a number of the episodes of Z Nation. That you're such a fan of.
What?
He's directed a bunch of episodes of Z Nation. So, I know you.
So he's an asylum director. Oh, great.
Well,
thanks.
I didn't want to say it just like that. But,
not even a silent movie, but a silent TV director. Yeah, I mean, this is a throwaway little thriller thing, as you said. I don't know. People try these all the time, right? They do this stuff. We've seen Kevin Bacon's done his turn at this.
I just sad to see that she never... She got her Oscar and ran. She never really was in anything.
She never did anything after that, I know.
That was worthy of her talent.
Which is unfortunate, but...
Let's talk about the remake of Flatliners, Joel Schumacher's 1990 film starring then a very young Julia Roberts, Kiefer. Let me briefly, before we get into this, because this reminds me that Flatliners is Kiefer Sutherland. Can I tell you, strangely enough, this odd Kiefer Sutherland situation I got going on right now? Hear me out.
What?
Yeah, listen to this. I can't get away from the guy. So I watched Young Guns the other night.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, it's good to see this movie, blah, blah, blah. I'll watch the sequel the next night. I watch the sequel the next night. Then Pompeii's on, and I'm like, oh, this is kind of a guilty pleasure. I get sucked into watching Pompeii as I'm barbecue, and I end up watching the whole fucking thing as I'm walking it out. Kiefer Sutherland's the goddamn bad guy in that. And I'm like, God, I like Kiefer Sutherland movies. And then I watch this Behind the Hollywood's Best Directors with Joel Schumacher. And I record A Time to Kill because I haven't seen it in forever. It's on HD Net. It's all cleaned up. Looks great. I forgot Kiefer Sutherland was the bad guy in that. Or was the brother of the bad guy, you know, the hillbilly, Billy Ray.
Uh-huh.
So I'm finally like, okay, I've had about enough of this goddamn actor. And Phone Booth comes on, and I'm like, oh, I want to watch Phone Booth. I totally forgot that he was the guy talking to Colin Farrell the whole fucking movie. And I've about had it with any Kiefer Sutherland situation for about another 20 years.
Oh, yeah. He just slips in there. Slips into all them movies.
I didn't know the guy was working so much. I was like, this might be the hardest working man in show business. He's taken over the title from Samuel L. Jackson. However, Flatliners was a film that starred him and Oliver Platt, one of the Baldwin brothers, I believe it was William, and a very hot rising star at the time, Julia Roberts, who was coming off of Pretty Woman, I believe, was the following movie she did was Flatliners. If not the second following movie. Great movie from what it was in the 90s. Very kind of chic and cool. And I remember it being highly stylized.
I mean,
very,
it's a cult movie, really, at this point.
Very, but in the same vein as Lost Boys in a lot of ways, with that kind of with that exact art direction and very 80s music video look, like a Madonna video come to life, you know?
Yeah, it's very popular and has remained popular. Obviously, they're remaking it. So what do you think of this one? To me, this seems a little too modern.
I actually think it looks okay. I think it. Really? I don't mind the modern because the concept actually isn't. You know, it's nothing new. It's a cool.
But I feel
idea
like they modernized the concept even to a point where it just. I don't know. Final Destination. You know, it's very. It feels very geared towards that.
But that's how the first was. I mean, they brought something back and they started.
No, I know, but it wasn't like. Final Destination modernized. I shouldn't say the first one. Really, like, this feels like Final Destination 4.
Ooh.
I mean, to me, I don't know. It feels very much like it just divulges into that plot very quickly, and I don't know.
I hope not.
Do you think it handles the other stuff? Well, the other stuff in this just played out so cheesy.
I like the cast in this, even though Ellen Page gets on my nerves. She didn't bother me in this trailer. And Nia DeBrief.
Kiefer Sutherland is in this. So.
He will be presiding over this somewhere, I'm sure. Maybe one of the ghosts they see.
Sure.
But this thing is, I think, ripe to do some good business with the younger audiences that have no recollection of it even being a movie that had, you know, any sort of relevance
back
in the day.
This can either do well, as you say, or this could totally flop. This is a hard call,
I think.
Call,
it's
going to
spawn a whole new little mini franchise.
It could, yeah. You could have a bunch of Flatliners stuff. Mm-hmm. If it's any good. But I don't know. These little horror movies like this are hard to tell because this, yeah, they all look like they could easily come out on video or in a theater. How
video.
Can you tell?
You said it too.
Yeah, that's what it is, video.
We showed our age tonight many, many times on episode 321. I think that's going to wrap it up for us tonight from the Movie Maverick Studio. We want to thank you guys for... I just upgraded us to a studio, if you didn't know that. That no longer dens, apartments, or anything like that.
No longer in our mother's basement.
That's right. Hold on, Ma.
We got kicked out. We're in the van now.
You want some meatloaf? She'll make you some meatloaf.
No. We're in a van. We're using the Mickey D's Wi-Fi to shoot this out to you guys.
Yeah, we're down by the river after this if you need us. And that's going to wrap it up for us. We want to thank you all for your continued support. We get such a response from this show. We just want to thank you guys, and we appreciate you guys taking the time out to listen to us do our thing. You can catch our back episodes on MovieMavericks.com, Stitcher, iTunes, TalkShoe, and a whole bunch of other places. We'll be back with you guys soon. A retro episode of The Mummy, the Brendan Fraser 1999 film, is coming at you next, and we'll be back after that with a regular podcast. So keep an ear out, an eye out, and all the above. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are The Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!